Tim, if you take your case back to its very origins, what was the tipping point that caused the investigation to begin and lead to the raid by the FBI in 2009?
That is something that probably will come out as the case develops, but it's not contained within the indictment, and I'm not permitted to go into that. But I think as this goes forward, that question will be answered.
When was the undercover person placed into play?
That was in late summer.
September.
Yeah, September of 2009. That would have been 2 months before the search was conducted here in the Circle.
Was that person in Los Angeles, Indianapolis, or Ohio?
Again, I don't think that's alleged within the indictment as to exactly where that occurred, and if it's not, it's kind of outside the evidence I can discuss. But it was 2 months before.
After the raid on Obsidian and Fear, why did the government not move to seize assets of Durham, to freeze the assets?
Well, those kinds of issues require certain amounts of evidence. And, you know, even if you had an asset today, number one, you would have to tie that to the specific offense that's alleged. And then before you could actually forfeit it, you would have to achieve a conviction of some type. So you're a long way down the pike. And that's one of the reasons why a conscious decision was made when it came to the vehicles which the bankruptcy trustee had sold, because if we had seized those vehicles, there'd be no money for victims today, or they wouldn't even be close to it, because we still are only one step in the journey of this case down the legal road. We have a long way to go yet before we would actually be able to forfeit something and distribute it to victims.
And what are the chances of victims seeing any kind of restitution in this?
You know, I don't think I wish to comment on that, because things always happen, but, you know, you can read what the bankruptcy trustee, and he has every incentive of collecting whatever he can. So,
could you characterize for us the level of cooperation you received from any Tim Durham associates, or were any other individuals involved not charged because they chose to cooperate with investigators?
I can't really characterize that. It's really outside the indictment.
Could you say there will not be any more charges of Durham's associates or anyone else connected with there? Or
cannot say that.
Does that book close? There may be others.
Well, the book is never closed.
Right.
We don't acknowledge, we don't say that the investigation that a certain person is under investigation or not investigation. As I said before, wherever the evidence takes us, we'll follow it and evaluate what we can.
Mr. Walter mentioned that this is one of the largest cases in Indiana history. So did you have to bring in extra people, or did you have the staff in the Southern District to deal with?
You know, I would just say that what we tried to do was do it right. And we tried to call on all the expertise that we had. And, you know, I have thanked Park Robertson, and I thanked Henry Van Dyke, who come to us from the Department of Justice. But that's a specialized section, the fraud section. I mean, they do white-collar crime. We do white-collar crime, too, but it would be stupid not to take the help of other professionals, because, after all, it's one Justice Department and it's one team, and this is an example of people in Washington, D.C., and people in Indianapolis working together to achieve a goal. You know, I'm perfectly happy and, I guess I'm perfectly willing to share whatever credit that there is with my brothers and sisters in Washington, D.C., because these people have the expertise. They've helped us. We do it again tomorrow if another case like this hit.
What was the section called then?
It's the fraud section of the criminal division. The Department of Justice, it's the white-collar people. I mean, they have a CIOST, which is the Child Exploitation Division and the Criminal Division, and they're experts. But so are the people that are with the fraud section, the experts in their own area, and we try to make use of that expertise.
Are they experts in forensics? I mean, what are the experts in there? What are they?
White-collar crime. White-collar crime.
You said this was the largest corporate fraud ever seen in the history of the state of Indiana. How does this compare? Maybe not necessarily Bernie Madoff, per se, but how does this compare to
You'd have to make that comparison yourself. I won't characterize it.
Was electronic surveillance utilized before the raids in November of 2009?
I don't characterize the evidence that's going to come out.
Chip, are you going to prosecute the guys?
No. These gentlemen who are here are going to prosecute.
They're retiring shortly?
Shortly, yes.
Can you describe the complexity of this as far as, you know, did you have to go through physical records? Did you have to go through forensic computers? I mean, what was, how did you go about this?
You want to take that?
Well, and maybe that would explain the amount of time that it took to get to this point.
I guess I would just say in any complicated white-collar case, there's, of course, thousands of types of records. Financial records, most obviously, bank records, internal financial books and records, but thousands of other kinds of records as well, business records related to the entities that are getting focused on, and then related entities, all of which require a lot of careful analysis to put a case together.
And is that one of the reasons this took 14 months to, or 16 months to arrive at this stage?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. I mean, we're talking about holding companies. We're talking about other kinds of business organizations that had to filter through. So it's a very complex operation. Anything else?
Do you have a maximum penalty for victim in all counts?
It's 12 counts that he was charged with. The first count is a conspiracy that has 5 years maximum, and each and every count, the other 11 after that, is 200. Or 20, I'm sorry, 20 years
so
after that.
Concurrent, consecutive, I mean, how are these different?
That's a judge, as we know, the sentencing guidelines, which are money-driven. In other words, the amount of loss that's determined by the court will actually be controlling in that. And so, it could be severe given the amount of money. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Grab one more. Thank you.
Thank you.